Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Susan, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, May 14th, and we are reading from the Big Book in the chapter More About Alcoholism, page 37. It's the fourth paragraph. Our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible, ending on page 38, but in a few weeks he breaks both legs. Today's readers are Vanessa G., who will read the text, Anne SCH will read a vision for you, and Cara L. is our backup. Jody E. is our newcomer greeter, and Leslie M. will share announcements. The reference numbers for Wednesday, May 13th, 10 a.m. Eastern is 23,454, and for this morning, Thursday, May 14th, 7 a.m. Eastern, the reference number is 23,460. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I will now ask Claudia C. in California to please read the 12 steps of OA. Good morning, Claudia.
Good morning, Susan. Good morning, everybody. This is Claudia C. from California, reading the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food. Their lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in our affairs. Thank you for letting me read, and I pass.
Thank you, Claudia. I will now ask Lisa C. in New Jersey to please read the 12 traditions of OA. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Lisa C. I am a compulsive overeater from New Jersey. Here are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Lisa. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery, described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. All right, so today we are going to resume our study of the Big Book. We are moving along in the chapter more about alcoholism. If you look to page 37, the bottom of the page, the fourth paragraph, we're going to start with our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible, ending on page 38 with, but in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. I will now ask Vanessa G. in New Mexico to start reading and then share with us. Good morning, Vanessa, and thank you.
Good morning, Susan. Thank you, and thank you, everybody else on the line. This is Vanessa G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in New Mexico. So we start the jaywalker story. Our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink as that of an individual with a passion, say, for jaywalking. He gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. Up to this point, you would label him as a foolish chap having queer ideas of fun. Luck then deserts him, and he is slightly injured several times in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. Presently, he is hit again, and this time he has a fractured skull. Within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley car breaks his arm. He tells you he has decided to stop jaywalking for good. But in a few weeks, he breaks both his legs. Gosh, let me set my timer. This story, to me, is all about chasing the effect. You know, this man chases cars, but, you know, I chased the feeling, the mood change, the thrill, the sedation, whatever, you know, anything in between, anything to have that feeling of fullness and sedation and sometimes the thrill, just chasing all the time, you know. And at the beginning, it just seemed like fun. You know, I started pretty early in high school, you know, having little binge parties with my girlfriends, you know, after one of them broke up with, you know, whatever boyfriend they had at the time. And the difference is that I continued to chase that effect, even if there was no event, even if there was no reason. I just chased the food over and over and over again. You know, there's a line in the doctor's opinion where it says that we essentially eat just because we like the effect. And this is a story of what the effect does for us. It takes us over. It changes us. It makes us want nothing else. And our minds are full, just full of the ideas of food and also staying away from food. You know, that's all we can think about over and over and over again. You know, I faced several issues because of my weight and my eating. You know, I've had cancer. I've had 2 surgeries as a result of that. I've had 2 knee replacements. You know, my life has been threatened physically, but it also has been threatened mentally. You know, the black moods that would settle down in my withdrawals, or when I was, you know, newly abstinent because, you know, after another relapse, all of those things made, you know, suicide, you know, an idea that it would come, and it would seem like there was just no way out. I am so grateful to have found a solution, to have found a power greater than myself in these rooms through your help that allows me to stop chasing, stop running out in front of traffic over and over and over again. You guys have saved my life, and I can't say thank you enough. And with that, I will close. Thank you for letting me share this morning.
Thank you, Vanessa, for your service this month. All right, so before we move on to the next phase, let me tell you the one paragraph that we read and that we are now commenting on. We're continuing on our journey and more about alcoholism. If you turn to page 37, the fourth paragraph, our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible. Ending on page 38 with, in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. Although we value your experience, we ask that you please, please, please limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. And as I like to point out, that counts for if you go to the earlier meeting in this one, if you already shared this morning, please pause and give somebody else a chance. What I need from you this morning is your first name, your last initial, and the state or country you are calling from today. Who would like to share with us on this paragraph this morning?
Janie G. in Michigan.
Melanie C. Amy G. in Michigan. Melanie C.
Larry G.
Larry G.
Iona P. in Massachusetts.
Christina J.
So hold on, somebody. Christina, I got you, but there was an Iona or somebody.
Yes, Iona from Massachusetts. Iona P.
Thank you so much. And did somebody else come in with Jennifer, good morning. Thank you.
Marla S. from Iowa.
Good morning, Marla. Thank you. Anyone else? I can take a couple more names or we can get
Jordan
going.
Jordan L.
Jordan, good morning. Yes. Who came in with Jordan?
Dana P.
There's some background noise. Dana, is that you?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, lots of background noise. I'm sure you can clear that up by the time you share. All right, here's who I have. I have Amy G, Melanie C, Larry G, Christina J, Iona P, Jennifer P, Marla S, Jordan L, and Dana P. So
do you want one more name?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, Liz S from Oregon.
Great. All right. Thank you, Liz. So if everybody other than Amy G in Michigan could mute their lines, Amy, I will turn it over to you. Please share with us.
Good morning, Susan. It's Janie G, J-A-N as in Nancy.
Oh, sorry.
Janie G in Michigan. That's okay. No problem, no problem. So glad to be here this morning. And boy, I mean, the jaywalker, I can relate so much. The insanity, the utter insanity. And, you know, I've noticed that other people have not known which me they're going to get when I come to any kind of social occasion. Like, am I going to be following my food plan or am I going to be like all bets are off and I'm just eating whatever? and just like not sure what they're dealing with. And I really hadn't experienced that before. But after several relapses, that's really who I'm showing up to be sometimes, or who I was showing up to be, because I'm living in recovery. But getting a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles, like how close to the line can I put my toes, like eating lookalikes, you know, buying something and thinking I'm going to eat it. If I only eat one and I eat it outside of the house, or I just buy one serving and keep it in the house. And, you know, just all that little management insanity that I've done. But the thrill is in, and the dopamine hit, or the whatever it is, the kick that I get as an addict doesn't even have to be in the ingesting of it. It can be in the rearranging and managing, exchanging things, making changes to my food plan without telling my food sponsor, you know, skipping the measuring, just estimating, and I can get the little dopamine hit of taking my will and my life back into my own hands. And really what I'm doing, as one of our fellows so eloquently says, I'm putting a big sign across my heart that says, keep out, God, keep out. And, you know, and then I'm starting to live with the consequences of that when I do that. And it's not good. It takes me down a really dangerous road with lots of consequences that hurt me. And that's the bottom line. The disease will tell me it's so good, and you can do a little bit. And all the lies, I made a big long list of all the lies the disease tells me. But in the end, I have to be insane not to look at the consequences. You know, for me, that was 31 gallstones and having to have my gallbladder removed. But no, I don't have a problem with fatty foods. I don't have a problem with any of that, you know, deep fried things. You know, what's it going to take, you know? But it takes something inside of me that has to be willing to surrender.
That's time.
I'm thankful. Thank you. And I'm thankful that I got to that point. 99% desperation and 1% hope. And I'm living in the solution today. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Janie G in Michigan. See, I heard the end of your name and it sounds like Amy. Next, we have Melanie C. Good morning, Melanie.
Hey, good morning, Susan. Good morning, everyone. I'm in Oregon today. I live in Idaho, but I'm here for a time for service. And I wanted to share on this because this was the dilemma that I had found myself in hindsight, for so many years, perhaps decades, not being able to get to what Bill's trying to explain here and giving this absurd example of a jaywalker is what the brain progresses to for those of us that are addicts, especially as compulsive overeaters, or in his case, alcoholics, that if I can recognize that I am not able to anymore learn from absurd things like this and reverse course, if I am no longer able to even recognize that that is even what is happening, and I continue to have negotiations with my mind, that I probably entered into a stage of this disease of no return, and things are going to be really dangerous and get even worse. And that somewhere, as the first Sharer was talking about, within me there would be this hope of change that I could then surrender to a program of recovery that we're learning about here and the hands of others that have done this already and be able to be recovered so that I can learn too. And that's not an easy feat either, because everything within my nature resists the idea of me not being self-reliant. However, in a community like this, and I see many more people following this pattern, and then this idea that I really am that type of person, that I am the addict, then there is tremendous hope to be able to live a life and conduct myself in a world where I was a square peg in a round hole forever, complete victim, that I will be able to build this parallel life. So when my mind says, maybe this time it's going to be different, I can handle just this one bite, it isn't that bad, and the list goes on and on, you might have them yourself, that I will be able to have this parallel life
with the community in the village that I live within here in the middle of the herd, with the instructions of a big book to execute practically a way in which I can live and be transformed in my mind and my thinking. And it's going to require a spiritual connection, because the heart and soul, the foundation of me, is spiritual. I'm buried under a broken human experience. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Melanie C., currently in Oregon. Next, we have Larry G. in California. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Susan. Yes.
There you are. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ahead.
Yeah, good morning to you. Yeah, thank you. Good morning to you as well. Larry G. from Sacramento. I actually am a member of a fellowship in Sacramento called the Jaywalkers, and my Jaywalkerism is alive and well and living, and I love the fact that I can laugh about that today, because that's the observation that the compulsive overeater, such as myself, we're like in a tragic comedy. If we were to broadcast this phone mean live to normies out there, they would just be shocked. They'd just in disbelief. But you know, we can laugh at each other. I can laugh at myself, and that's where the healing begins. And today, my Jaywalkerism is in remission. I can truly say that today, that most days, you know, because of you, because of this fellowship, how this fellowship supports my entire absence from compulsive eating and food behaviors and my alcoholic foods. I mean, I get that support in this call. I did not get that support for 20 years in other meetings, and I loved it, because I could eat with abandon, and I didn't have any restrictions on my eating. But over this program, A Vision for You has really supported me, and pursuing and committed to a absence that is beyond my wildest dreams. I mean, I can't put in human words the miracles I have experienced as a result of coming to A Vision for You. And more importantly, the Big Book. You have helped me to rejuvenate my love of the Big Book. I have loved the Big Book, followed it for many, many years, but not in OA, in other fellowship, AA fellowship, but not in OA. And since I've come back here, I have just fallen back in love with the Big Book, and I can see myself as a compulsive eater in every story and every word in the Big Book. And you know what? If I walk away today, this fellowship, this Big Book, as I relate to as a compulsive, has absolutely screwed my eating up. I will never be able to eat, freely it with joy again, even if it's a few seconds, knowing what I know and what I've learned in this few years I've been with this fellowship. And with that, I pass back to you, Susan.
Thank you so much, Larry. Next, we have Christina J., and I think you're in Washington State. Christina, please correct me if I'm wrong. Go ahead.
I am, and I didn't know where I was in the lineup. So give me just...
there you go.
What a paragraph. So I've had something in me that began to build up as a child that wanted release, needed comfort from the start. But there was no teacher. There was no parent. My soul got more and more loaded, down, buried, lonely, isolated, ashamed, guilty, jealous, fearful over the years. My brain and my heart, my emotional body became locked. So, of course, I went to the food, especially when I was younger, because it was fun. I wanted what he talks about, the thrill. I wanted to enjoy myself. There was no enjoyment around me except for the small amount of time I had with my mother between the ages of 1 and 5. I was the firstborn before all hell broke loose in that house and continued on for the rest of my life until a certain point, of course. But the pain of the food, the pain of getting thrown in front of these things, you know, the thrill of thinking about it, the fun that I thought I was having with the food, the pain of that didn't build up until years later. So I was willing to make that sacrifice because I didn't know how to handle what was happening inside of me. I didn't even know something was happening inside of me. I just knew two things. The food took care of me, but the food made me miserable because I wanted to be thin and beautiful. I wanted to be loved and accepted. I had a God. I believed in God. I cried out to God for years in many, many, many journals, but I couldn't quit reaching for the food because it was so ingrained in my bones that this was my solution. I didn't get it for years until 2015, when I stepped into vision and I began to get it. And it took me 10 years to get it. And what was that getting? The getting was the opening of the door in my heart. And I can't tell you, today, that deepening relationship makes me want to cry. With this power in my heart, with this compassion in my heart, with this thing I feel in my heart, even if I just touch my heart center, I can feel the tenderness of this love, is deepening and growing. And I want that more than I want the fun of the food, the exterior fun, the exterior thrill, the exterior thing that takes me to hell every time. It's not worth it for me anymore. And it took all that time. I want to keep walking with this thing because when I'm not walking with this thing, I'm in myself. And to tell you the truth, you know, myself, my lower self, my all this selfishness and fear and stuff, it's miserable. It's miserable. Of course, I didn't really want to stop because that's all I had. But I can tell you, if you get into this program and you start walking this and you start having those little light bulb moments in your heart, you want more and more and more of them.
That's kind.
And of course, one more thing, I did have the allergy that kept me locked in it as well. So it's a double-edged sword. Stay with us. Get in the center of the herd and you'll find freedom. Love you all. Pass.
Thank you so much, Christina J. in Washington State. Next, we're going to Massachusetts to Iona P. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you all for your service. And oh my goodness, the shares, they're my story. This is my story, the Jaywalker. And just like so many of the stories in this book, especially this section, I read it first time, couldn't relate, second time. Really good stories. Boy, these poor people were really suffering and they were crazy. And it took me a few times going through this book and really most recently just going through the 12 steps again and going through this book with my sponsor. I could see myself in every single story. Why couldn't I stop eating when I wanted to? And I was thinking back to my childhood. I was very rebellious. I was obedient, and yet I was rebellious. I believed in God, yet I didn't trust in his power. And so I think I would eat to avoid the feelings that I had, whatever the feeling was, happy, sad, mad, glad, and couldn't accept the truth for what it was. I didn't like myself, and therefore I didn't let other people like me either, and I kept going to the food because that seemed to make me happy. And while I was young, I didn't gain weight. It wasn't until I hit my 30s that the scale started going up, and I didn't like that because I always wanted to look good. And so that brought me to an OA in the 80s. And then I left, didn't come back until 2006. And I was absent for many years and was recovered working the steps. And then COVID hit, stopped going to meetings, and it didn't take long before I was back in the food, even though I was weighing and measuring my food. I was playing a little bit more with things, and the further away I got, and then I realized I was getting away from God, and I knew I had to come back to this program. And I had been part of a vision many years ago, and so I knew where I needed to come, and I'm very, very grateful for all of you, and that I'm back, recovered, and so willing to accept myself and all these stories and to share what I've received. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Iona P. in Massachusetts. Next, we have Jennifer P. in New Jersey. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Susan.
Please let me know if you can't hear me because sometimes my signal is
good. I can hear you. All good.
Okay. First of all, I love this meeting. Thank you all for the wonderful shares beforehand and for your service. You know, I think what stands out for me here is that that this jaywalker, right, is that first of all, this is progressive, but like, you know, he gets a thrill, and at first he's skipping, you know, and then later on he's not skipping. He's like, you know, doing more than that. And I find that for me, you know, at first I think like if I forget who I am, I can be like coming close to the line or thinking I can be a normal eater, because that's what it says in here too. It says for the normal person, you would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. Well, of course, I would expect if I was normal, at first it starts with gaining some weight, or when I was in college, or, you know, seeing that, or and then it gets progressive. And I'll try as long as I can't. I mean, that's just my nature, that I'll try as long as I can't. It's kind of like returning to a bad relationship. You know, I can kind of see it's bad, know it's bad, but then still keep going. And so I think that we know and he knows, but yet he continues, and I'm that he in the story. And there's part of me that feels sorry. I mean, I do feel compassion because, you know, I don't think he really wants to be doing this any more than I want to be going out and hurting myself with food. But yet what he doesn't have is he hasn't been able to find the thrill that comes from what only our higher power can do for us, and that there can be something better. And the big book talks about it can be beyond our wildest dreams, right? Like, we have a book that is that titled, I think Roseanne's book. And it can be, and how can it be? Only, as someone said earlier, through God, through a spiritual transformation. And also, too, I have to say this. Somebody, I was listening to the meeting this morning, but talking about, like, am I allowing somebody to hold my hand? Am I allowing myself to have a sponsor who has done this, who teaches me, who holds my hand? Other people, fellows, am I getting in the center of the herd? Because if I'm just darting out into the traffic or walking along the line or thinking I want this thrill, it's going to happen unless I am completely always vigilant. And vigilance happens through the actions. And as I think my sponsor told me, you know, recovery is not in my head, it's in my feet. And so take the action. So I'm just so grateful to be here. I can't decide to stop jaywalking. I have to have a God who helps me know that I can't. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Jennifer P. in New Jersey. Next, we have Marla S. in Iowa. Good morning, Marla.
Hi, Susan. Hi. Can you hear me, Susan?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Hey, guys, it's Marla, recovered in Iowa, Marla S. I love this paragraph because it describes why I was so mystified for so many years by why I would keep doing the same things over and over that I did not want to be doing. I was becoming morbidly obese and, you know, for years, and just experiencing all the physical pain and the mental anguish and, you know, with all the weight loss attempts and all the diets and things and attempts to manage myself. And what finally hit me when I got into it was a medically supervised program where I finally, after like 15, 20 years in morbid obesity, had lost all this weight in the commercial program. And I was there. I had arrived and I finally got in a normal body, which was just amazing. But then once I had succumbed to the first bite somewhere and the weight started coming back on and on and on and on, binging and all that again. So what I discovered was that, you know, consequences were never enough. I mean, I had every reason not to eat and not to pick up the bite, but I did it anyway. So what I love about this paragraph is that it talks to me where it says, my behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink as that of an... Now, it does not say my behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible as someone who keeps punching themselves in the face because their nail polish is pretty, or because I am angry at my kid, I pick my kid up and throw them out the window. I didn't do that absurd, incomprehensible stuff with other issues. I was pretty well established in my brain in other areas, but with respect to the food, to the lie, to the mental, the delusional thinking, I am not normal. And it's like having a learning disability. So I feel like today I go, okay, I have a brain disorder. I can be normal about what I think about, you know, choices and consequences in every other arena of my life. I don't always make good choices. But when it comes to the food and thinking about food and the lies that I believe that can completely deny reality, in that area, my brain has a disorder. It cannot stop the disorder. Thank you, Susan. I hope that made some sense, and I hope everyone has a great day. Thanks.
Thank you, Marla. Next, we're going to go to Jordan L. in Colorado. Good morning, Jordan. Jordan L., I'm sure you're trying to star one. All right, what we'll do is we'll go to Dana P., and Jordan, I will come back to you. Dana, please go ahead and share with us.
Good morning, Susan. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, less background?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, perfect. Hi, good morning, everyone. This is Dana P. I live in California. Thank you, Susan, for your service, and thank you, Vanessa, for the lead-in. You know, I can so relate to, you know, the idea of the effect. And when I first read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, this particular story, just reading the story, I got an effect. And I was like, wow, yeah, that's me, that's me. And I was actually quite proud of the idea that, you know, I was so daring to be running in traffic. And literally, I did those types of things in my life. And you know, looking to feel something, I felt nothing. I was completely numbed out by food and compulsively vomiting, compulsively exercising. I was completely numbed out, and I wanted to feel something. So, you know, what did I do? Jump out of airplanes, swim with sharks, do a variety of dangerous sexual behaviors, a lot of stuff, stealing. I have quite a laundry list. And going to page 103, of the big book, again, of Alcoholics Anonymous, our textbook here, it says bottles were only a symbol. And the food, behaviors, whatever that looks like for me anyway, was just a symbol of what? This spiritual illness, this spiritual absence in my life. And, you know, I thought I was quite spiritual, so it was very, very confusing for me. I did yoga, I meditated, I went on retreats. So again, like I said, it was quite confusing for me, but I was so, my life was so unmanageable. And that's what this whole chapter is about, more about insanity, more about unmanageability, that second half of step one, that I was willing to go through the 12 steps and do the work that was required and first Alcoholics Anonymous and Overeaters Anonymous. And in Overeaters Anonymous, that's when it really started to click for me and started to change for me. And I'll tell you now, I can relate to every single story in this book, every single story. So it's not just the running in traffic, crazy, insane guy. It's every single story. And I am recovered in California. Again, Dana P., thank you for letting me share, Susan, and I'm going to pass.
Thank you so much, Dana. All right, let me try for Jordan again. Jordan L., are you available to share with us? Okay, perhaps Jordan had to leave. Next, we'll go to Liz S. in Oregon. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning. Liz S., recovered compulsive eater. I live in Oregon, but I get to stay here in Boston with my brother for a day. It's been said by other people, bits and pieces of it, but the adrenaline or whatever gives me such an excitement. I used to be proud of the fact that I was a daredevil, that I would take risks. That was like, ooh, a grown-up thing to do, you know. And so I took risks, and I took risks with things like, oh, I don't know, men and food and drugs and alcohol and other very compulsive behaviors. And I thought, okay, while I'm doing this, I'm feeling a high. And it was like the high in my childhood when I was able to please a parent. I'm not going to go all ACA here with you, but just saying. And I kept trying to repeat that feeling over and over because it would take me outside myself. When I'm facing a crisis, I get real focused, and day-to-day worries leave me. And the same thing with the food. If I was being quote-unquote bad with the food, then I had something to focus on. So I had to disconnect the urge to take a risk from the action, and God helped me do that. God helped me break that connection and say, instead of taking a risk in this area, you know, do something that's safer for your life. Like maybe it's go cross-country skiing instead of downhill skiing, or, you know, take walks instead of train for a marathon, you know? So, or eat abstinently instead of compulsively. And so I'm getting used to doing things in moderation. And sometimes it feels really boring, and sometimes it feels really cool. And I haven't normalized yet, but I'm on my way. Thank you for listening, and I pass.
Perfect timing. Thank you so much, Liz S. in Oregon. All right, we probably have time for two more shares. Who would like to take those two spots?
Mo H.
Thank you, Mo. And who came in with Mo?
Robin P.
Robin P. Okay, here we go. Mo, take it away. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Susan, and good morning to you. Thank you for taking the meeting. My name is Mo H., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater and sugar addict from Walnut Creek, California. So I was just reading this sentence again. It says, he tells you he has decided to stop jaywalking for good. Well, I can't tell you how many times I decided to go on another diet. I mean, in ad infinitum diets. And I thought that's what worked. I did not know I had a problem until I walked into these rooms. And even in these rooms, I didn't want to believe I had a problem. So I continued to be the jaywalker and testing it out. You know, oh, I'll add a little bit of this or just this one time or whatever. And then I was off and running like this jaywalker, going back, going back, going back, getting a thrill. And I'm trying to think if I got a thrill. You know, the thrill wasn't in the bite or the food. It was in how I got it, how I sneaked it, how I was able to, you know, get away, so to say, get away with it. And just insanity. talking to normal people, they would think I was insane. And I was addicted to the adrenaline, to the rush, to the high that I would get, like going into the grocery store and sneaking around to get whatever I wanted and getting out of there and, you know, eating it in my car. Crazy, crazy, crazy. So a couple of things I have written here is a lot of information, but no transformation. And I'll tell you, for years and years and years in studying this big book, well, when I got into the big book in 2015, I was in the rooms for years before that, and we didn't study the big book in most of my meetings. I was getting a lot of information, and my eyes became quite opened being on this meeting, receiving all this information. But, you know, I wasn't doing the work. I was not doing my connecting with my higher power. I was trying to do it on my own, et cetera, et cetera. And that never worked. So I had to fully concede to my innermost self that I am a compulsive overeater. I will always be. I will die being a compulsive overeater. And I need to arrest the disease every day by working the steps and the tools and listening to you, all of you who are my guides. So with that, I pass.
That's time.
Thank you, Susan.
Perfect. Thank you. Next, we have Robin P. Robin, you probably won't have a full 3 minutes, but let's see where we go. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Good morning. Hi, Robin P. in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And, you know, my mom was compulsive. I remember, oh boy, was she a jaywalker. I had my little girl in the stroller in New York City. My mom was holding on to the side of the stroller, and I was pushing it, and she pulled me into traffic to get across the street. And I'm trying to stop, and I'm saying, Mom, you're going to get us killed. You're going to get us killed. You've got to stop. Come back here. And lo and behold, I lost the war, and we made it across the street with cars honking like crazy. This section of the big book always brings this up for me. You know, in order to live and be happy and healthy, I have to stay in parameters. I have to stay within the parameters of normal, natural, and also laws, also laws that people have made. And I can't take the risks if I'm going to be safe. And for me, you know, admitting that I'm powerless over my thinking and powerless over how my mind functions around this addiction has been a godsend for me. And being able to consult with my higher power throughout the day about decisions that I want to make or what I'm feeling, and have the fellowship as well. I can't do it by myself.
That's time.
And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for your shares. I know we ran out of time, but please come back tomorrow. Thank you, Team Thursday, Vanessa G and SCH, Cara L. Please stay on with Jody E and Leslie M if you need a sponsor or are an available sponsor. And thank you to Claudia and Lisa for reading the steps and traditions. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And SCH, will you please read a vision for you for us? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. Good morning, everyone. My name is Anne SCH. I'm a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater living in British Columbia, Canada. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.